Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 63. My name is John. Heaven's drunk from the poison you use. Charm the wolves with the eyes of a gambler. Now I see it's a comfort to you. Hammer my bones on the anvil of daylight. Having done this podcast for a little over 5 years now, I know I've repeated myself a few times. And I'm not just talking about the opening quotes that I use. I'm pretty sure I used lines from this same Beck song before. I know I have really hit the gay marriage subject pretty heavily over the past year and a half, so it's especially true there. But more specifically, I know that I've made some exact same point or example. The thing is, I know that's not the only topic where I've repeated myself. Either that or I'm having some kind of crazy deja vu. I don't really know how many times I've done it. It's not practical for me to go back through every episode and see if I've said something already. I'm saying this because I don't know if something I'm going to say later is a total repeat of a point I've already made in a previous podcast, or if it's something I've been saying for ages in my personal life, but never here. Likewise, I'm positive some of the points I make in this podcast are certainly going to be repeated at some future date. I sort of feel I should apologize. Maybe. Not likely. I'm not going to apologize. I've had a couple of things on my mind this past month, but nothing too involved to really pull 30 minutes on one topic. There's plenty of subjects that could go a full 30 out there, but nothing that I'm in the mood to talk about right now. So I'm doing another house cleaning, so to speak, to check a scattering of little topics off my list. Let me get this one out of the way first. Tom Brady and Deflategate. I'm not a big Patriots fan. I like them, but I don't love them. I'm not a big Tom Brady fan. When it comes to quarterbacks, I prefer Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck, Matthew Stafford. You get the idea. No, I didn't read the full report. No, I'm not going to read the full report. No, I don't care that I won't have the full story until I read it. It's not that important. I just want to hit the big takeaway from the report. It is, quote, probable that Patriots personnel deliberately deflated balls during the AFC Championship game, and Brady likely was at least generally aware of the rules violations, end quote. That's the best they can do? Brady is suspended for 4 games. The team loses $1 million and draft picks. An NFL player can punch his girlfriend unconscious, admit he did it directly to the commissioner, and, until the video of the assault is made public, he is only suspended 2 games. But a 200-plus page report concluding that a guy was likely generally aware of something other people probably did merits a 4-game suspension. And you people wonder why I prefer Australian football. Here's what I know. The game where the Patriots were likely generally aware of deflation that probably deliberately happened was a 45-7 victory, including three rushing touchdowns. So, it doesn't sound to me like the passing of the quarterback was the deciding factor in the game. Second, the losing team, the Indianapolis Colts, notified the NFL a week before the game that they suspected the Patriots were deflating the footballs below the league-mandated requirement. And the NFL, rather than being proactive and monitoring the situation in order to preserve the integrity of a conference championship game, tried to prove the doctoring after the fact. Third, the report hinges its speculation on text messages between two equipment guys who say in their text they talked to Brady, which seems damning until you realize just because they texted that they talked to the quarterback doesn't mean they actually did. Look, this is not a government matter. If it were, I would be much more vocal about punishing the accused with a deplorable lack of evidence. This is not the government. This is the private sector. A private company has the right to deal with alleged infractions even when the best their very own people could come up with is weak hearsay. One of the douchiest of all phrases, the appearance of impropriety, comes to mind here. The problem is, you have a shitty commissioner who has proven himself to be gutless against everything except destroying the game for kickers. So he needs to flex some muscle to show he's not as impotent and incompetent as some of us think he is. So they put on a kangaroo court and hand down their sentence to make the commish look tough. This, along with the other debacles the league has faced recently, could be the first step in the decline of American football as the national pastime. But seriously, hop on the internet and look up Australian football. Or check out some of the games on Fox Sports 2 or Fox Soccer Plus. They're about a third of the way into the season right now, and it's a game that really deserves more attention. It's that much fun. The next story also involves a pretty boy. Ben Affleck didn't want his ancestral history aired. Recently, the PBS show Finding Your Roots featured actor Ben Affleck. The show delves into the family history of their guest, and during the research into Affleck, they found a slave owner. Just an aside before I tell you what set me off. If you delve into the family history of every single human being on the face of the earth, you are almost guaranteed to find two things: slaves and slave owners. It is not limited to one ethnicity. Back to Affleck. He was embarrassed about his family history. That's certainly understandable. He was so embarrassed about it that he asked the show to avoid that particular ancestor when they aired the episode. Once the media caught wind of it, though, it became widely known and spun against the actor. Okay, one more aside. If you were to ask me what I think of Ben Affleck before, say, a year ago, I would have said, I don't think of Ben Affleck. As of right now, all I really care about is that he doesn't totally fuck up Batman. Well, that and this ancestral racism issue. In particular, when I first heard the news about this cover-up that Affleck was doing about his family history, the reporter stated that Ben Affleck was trying to hide racism in his past. In his past. No. No, 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 no! Ben Affleck does not have racism in his past. Okay, I don't know the guy. I don't know his heart. Sure, it's entirely possible he might have said or done something racist. But the fact alone that an ancestor was a slave owner does not mar Affleck's past. Affleck is only responsible for his actions, his thoughts, his life. He does not bear the burden of the actions of another human being, even one in his family tree. I once endured a conversation with a person who was convinced George Bush was racist because his grandfather was racist. That was the entire basis of the guy's argument. No example of what Bush himself had done or said, but wholly because two generations before, someone in his family tree was racist. So I asked him if that meant anyone who had racists in their family was automatically racist. He said that that was likely. Then I let him know that my great-grandfather was a Grand Dragon in the Ku Klux Klan. He backed off his stance pretty quickly. But you see the idiocy of the argument. This notion that ancestors somehow dictate the person you are and become is sickening to me. I've heard our current president talk about people having slavery or slave ownership in their blood, like it's some kind of genetic inheritance. The idea that the sins of the father are passed on the sons and subsequent generations is a great plot device for Klingons on Star Trek The Next Generation, but in the real world, we should long be past such foolishness. In the real world, we should look at people for what they are as individuals, not what lurks in the foggy past of their family history. And people who want to assign such idiocy are no better than the racists they claim to oppose. Okay, enough of the pretty boys. Let's get to some memes. I get a lot of people in my Facebook feed who like to bitch about the national television newscasts. Generally, they're divided into two groups. Those who think Fox News is the greatest and fairest network to ever grace the airwaves. And those who think Fox News came to be when Satan finally broke down and got his own cable programming to talk directly to the damned. You can tell the collectivists in my friends who post how much Fox News lies about, well, everything. And you can tell the conservatives in my friends who talk about how, once again, Fox News got it right. I'm going to tell you what I keep trying to tell them. If you think Fox News is biased, you are absolutely right. Sure, Bob Beckel and Juan Williams will openly admit they're liberals, while Andy Levy and Kennedy and John Stossel and Judge Napolitano will openly admit that they are libertarians. However, most of the commentators on the various shows will flat out tell you they are looking at things from a predominantly conservative prism. Fox News is a conservative commentary network. The thing is, though, if you think that every other network or news program doesn't have their own prism, then you are either woefully ignorant or in a dangerously deep state of denial. And if you really think about it, that's the way it should be. There should be different points of view on different networks because it is impossible to get unbiased reporting. Up until about a generation ago, every metropolitan area in the United States had at least two newspapers competing with each other, sometimes even more. I remember growing up in San Antonio, there was the Express and the Light. There were multiple newspapers because each one had a different political view. You could be a hack and only read the paper that favored your personal prism, but the only way to get more than one side of the story was to read more than one paper. So it is today, where the only way to get more than one side is to have a network that presents an opposing viewpoint. You watch Fox News, then you watch MSNBC. You watch Fox News, then you watch CNN. You watch Fox, you watch CBS or ABC or NBC. Ah, but here's the caveat. The idea that there are two sides to every story is an oversimplification. There are many sides to each story. And to think that listening to one conservative-leaning network and one of the liberal-leaning networks somehow gives you the full story is wrong. But at least it's more than just a single source. Next, I have a quote I have seen a lot recently in memes. Art should disturb the comfortable and comfort the disturbed. Variations of this meme have been making their rounds again. It comes in waves, like that stupid one about 5 Saturdays and 5 Sundays in the same month, or some crap like that. I never understood why this is elevated to some kind of sage advice for artists. A few podcasts back, I talked about the contrast between the uproar of Alice Eve's gratuitous underwear scene in Star Trek Into Darkness versus the deafening silence of Hugh Jackman's gratuitous nude scene in X-Men Days of Future Past. Let me once again stress that I am all for Alice Eve in her underwear if that's what she wants to do. But I understand it was indeed gratuitous to the plot necessities of the movie. Ironically, the type of person who would decry the stunning Miss Eve daring to show too much skin are the same ones who would champion art disturbing the comfortable. Art doesn't have to do that. Disturbing the comfortable is gratuitous. Why can't art just be something beautiful to look at? Why should it have to disturb the comfortable? The very notion automatically puts limits and qualifications as to what constitutes art. I thought artists, and those who say they love art, didn't want boundaries to be put up or definitions of what constitutes art. The idea that art should do something specific to a specific type of person seems wrong. I don't know much, but I do know that a Sunday on La Grande Jetée is art. But it's not going to disturb the comfortable. If anything, it will give more comfort to the comfortable. I don't care if it doesn't pass the requirements of a myopic meme, the person who posted the meme, or the person who the meme quotes. To me, the idea of creating something with the purpose of disturbing people who are otherwise comfortable is cheap. It's chintzy. It's the lowest form of art. Lastly, an acquaintance on Facebook recently posted a meme that was a parody of the Bible verse Matthew 5:41. The meme stated, "If someone forces you to bake a cake for a gay wedding, bake for them too." Of course, many of the pro-LGBT community got a kick out of it. Another post, I believe it was referencing a political cartoon, theorized what it would be like if someone were to go to a bakery and ask them to make a cake with a picture of Muhammad on it so they could have it for a free speech rally. Not the same, but still thought-provoking. Which is the greater evil? Using force to prevent people from doing something they have the right to do? Or using force to make people do something they have the right to refuse? I don't want to patronize an establishment who refuses service to people based on their prejudice, even one that is supposedly backed by their religion. They are in error, but that's beside the point. However, if that is their belief, then they must have the right to operate their business how they choose. This is not a time in history where a town or a state can operate in prejudice and be swept under the proverbial rug. This is not an age where injustices can be so easily hidden by some region's establishment. In this age of social media, if you're refused service for any reason, the word can easily be spread, and people can decide whether or not to give such a business their hard-earned money. But be careful. We should all be aware of the waitress who posted a receipt from a customer with a note stating she didn't get a tip because they don't give money to homosexuals. We should also be aware that the waitress faked the whole thing. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I don't give a damn about your skin color. The skin thickness, however, is vital. Are we so thin-skinned that if some mean old narrow-minded baker won't bake us a cake, that we run to mommy and daddy government to force them to do it? If you're willing to use the government to force someone to go against their natural rights, what natural right of your own are you willing to sacrifice when someone uses the government against you? Might as well decide now, because if you demand the government take away somebody else's rights, you give government the power to take away yours as well. Recently, Ireland became the first nation to legalize gay marriage. Gina asked me, "That's good news, isn't it?" She was surprised when I replied, "No. No, it's not. But not for the reasons most people think. It is the natural right of individuals to freely associate with each other. It is also the natural right of individuals to enter into private contract with each other, assuming obviously the free association and private contract are between consensual adults. It is short-sighted to go to government and ask them to grant you your natural rights. Government has no power to prevent you from your natural rights. If you ask them to grant something that is already yours, you're giving government power it was never meant to have. We should not be asking any government to legalize any kind of marriage. We should be asking government what makes them think they can stop us. We should be telling government it has no business defining marriage one way or another. I hear the American political left having a hissy fit about government being in the bedroom, but they have no problem legislating people's rights to defend themselves. I hear the American political right mewling about governments legislating people's right to defend themselves, but they have no problem with government in people's bedrooms. The fact is, every one of us has been conditioned in our current society to think that if we don't like something, we need government to get involved. Boys shouldn't kiss boys. Get government involved. That gun looks scary. Get government involved. That fast food place doesn't sell enough healthy food. Get government involved. That comic book has a zombie in it. Get government involved. That substance might be harmful if you put too much of it into your body. Get government involved. I want you to think about the times leading up to prohibition in the United States. I'm just going to quote Wikipedia here because this sentence sums it all up for me. It was prompted by the Dry Crusaders, a movement led by rural Protestants and social progressives in the Democratic and Republican parties, and was coordinated by the Anti-Saloon League and the Women's Christian Temperance Union. Please note that it was the rural Protestants and social progressives from both the Republican and Democratic parties doing this. The religious right, the ultra-left. They're still working together now to take away our rights. They just want you to think they oppose each other. But they're working towards the same goal. Okay. Now I want you to visualize one of those people from back then. In fact, I want you to focus on one of those women in the Christian Temperance Union. Think about what that woman must be like. Think about one of those militant Bible thumpers, not the Christian who believes what they believe and accepts that you might think something else. I mean, one of those people who looks at others and thinks they have the right to tell everyone else how to live. Anything that the average person might consider fun is automatically the devil's work. She's never drunk anything stronger than warm milk. Sex is only for getting pregnant, so she's probably never done anything other than missionary. She's prudent, holier than thou, and supercilious. And she's probably as physically appealing as your average rock. And that person thinks her superior beliefs must be forced on everyone else, so she and her collective like-minded swarm ban alcohol for over a decade in a nation that is supposed to champion individual rights and individual liberty. That is what I see. That kind of person is what I see in my mind when I hear of some self-righteous prick today thinking they have the right to prevent gay marriage, or force a baker to make a cake for a gay wedding, or ban firearms, or, well, you get the idea. Aren't you tired of those people? Aren't you ready to relegate them to the past and be nothing more to the future than a cautionary tale of what not to be? Sometimes when I throw disparate topics together, I wonder if there is a thread to connect them. I don't see how these relate to one another in any way other than the most general. These are all things that distract and divide. They distract us from the root of the problem, the invasion of our personal liberties. And they divide us into thinking we are in opposing camps when we're really all just being conditioned to distrust and dislike each other over otherwise petty squabbles. Who cares if someone believes something other than you? If they're not trying to deny you your natural rights, let them believe and do what they want. And just because you or a group you belong to has been hurt by injustices doesn't give you the right to go out and seek revenge and hurting others or singling out another group as the focus of your own hatred and prejudice. Not while there is a greater threat that needs to be dealt with. I am, of course, referring to removing Roger Goodell as NFL commissioner. Couldn't resist. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.